Welcome to Angels and Seer Stones presents Demons and Pendulums, a podcast on Chad Daybell's theology from the perspective of a Latter-day Saint folklorist. So here I am, setting off on a limited series on the most disturbing topic I can imagine. It's horrifying because it's about how someone used faith and a professed relationship with the divine to perform the most evil deeds possible, the murder of children. So I guess I'll start by telling you about me, why I'm doing this podcast, and why I want you to listen to it instead of the many others that you could listen to about this topic. First, I am a scholar with 2 decades of experience researching and writing on Latter-day Saint folklore and Latter-day Saint history. I hold a PhD from Florida State University in American religious history, and I'm currently an assistant professor of folklore and literature at Brigham Young University. I'm an expert in Latter-day Saint schisms, visionaries, and legends. After I published my first book, Terrible Revolution, Latter-day Saints and the American Apocalypse, I became recognized as a leading voice in the study of Latter-day Saints and end times belief. Between the pandemic and the Chad Daybell case, I was inundated with media appearances and phone calls from producers. You may have seen or heard me on Inside Edition, Mormonland, Radio West, Gospel Tangents, or LDS Perspectives. If you followed the Daybell case, you've also probably read my commentary early on in the media frenzy. So those are my academic credentials. I also have another set of credentials that are also admittedly a set of biases. I'm a practicing Latter-day Saint. I openly claim my faith and openly believe in supernatural beings, divine revelation, prophets, and redemption through Jesus Christ. I'm a convert. I was baptized into the Episcopalian Church in the weeks after my birth. My family attended off and on throughout my childhood. As a young adolescent, I became very interested in the Bible, and when I was 13 years old, I sat down with Latter-day Saint missionaries who told me about their faith, about the Book of Mormon, about Joseph Smith, who was a kid like me who had a vision, and then these sister missionaries taught me how to pray. I didn't have the same experience as Joseph Smith when I asked God about the Book of Mormon, but I did have a revelation. I won't tell you about it here, but it led me to become a Latter-day Saint. My family remained Episcopalian and kindly supported my new path. So this is where I'm coming from. I'm a scholar and I'm a Latter-day Saint. So what are you getting with Demons and Pendulums? This is the first time a believing Latter-day Saint scholar has produced a sustained treatment on Chad Daybell. It's actually the first time a scholar has handled the topic at all, with the exception of scholars who have given hot takes for the media. My hope is that you will recognize this podcast as substantially different from others. This is not the first time I've written about Chad Daybell. I've been writing about these atrocities and the ideas that influenced them or justified them since 2020. That year, Terrible Revolution was published by Oxford University Press. This book was based on my doctoral dissertation. I had completed that 6 years earlier, and it was built from research I had begun several years before that. I had finished writing the book long before Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow had made the papers, but I was aware of Daybell. He had written a series of apocalyptic novels, but I didn't know him from his novels. I knew him as the publisher of a series of near-death experience books. For years, when Chad heard someone had claimed a special visionary gift, he would approach them about writing a book that he would then publish. This included Julie Rowe, who did play a key role in the last chapter of my book. However, by the time I was completing my book and sending it off to press, I knew Chad had revealed that his books were not fiction at all. He had been a prophet, biding his time to disclose his gifts. At least that's what he said. I considered discussing Chad Daybell alongside Julie Rowe as a way to include discussion of apocalyptic novels, but ultimately, I decided his novels just seemed too derivative, and I had more than enough material to work with. I think this was the right move. A year later, Chad and Lori's misdeeds unfolded in the press. Even before my book was released, I began to get calls from journalists and documentarians, each eager to tell the tragedy. Most of this was behind the scenes. Filmmakers who wanted to sell to BBC or to HBO. Maybe some of them succeeded, I don't know. I did some public interviews, but ultimately because I worked for a university owned by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and there was a concern that my comments might be mistaken for an official comment from the church, I started declining these requests. I feel very good about that. In truth, when someone asked for an interview specifically about the Daybell situation, they usually focused on my experiences meeting people involved in the case rather than my scholarship on Last Day's belief, and that was never appealing to me. They treated me like an informant, a source, rather than a scholar, even if they would ostensibly be quoting me as a scholar. In 2020, I was working for a wonderful research center at Brigham Young University, the Neil A. Maxwell Institute for Religious Scholarship. Once a month, we would come together to discuss developments in our individual research and writing. When it was my turn, I told my colleagues about Chad and Lori Daybell and how I had begun to publish a series of articles. I was thinking about putting a book together. It was an obvious sequel to Terrible Revolution, after all. How Latter-day Saint apocalyptic belief among the laity could go wrong. Philip Barlow, a very important Latter-day Saint scholar, spoke up and asked the pivotal question, what's the significance of these murders beyond providing just another chapter in Under the Banner of Heaven? He was talking about John Krakauer's 2003 book, Under the Banner of Heaven, Story of a Violent Faith. It was a bestseller written by a journalist who had already proven himself as a compelling writer with Into the Wild and Into Thin Air. Under the Banner of Heaven was a more extensive project than these, a history that drew a link between the infamous Mountain Meadows Massacre with the murders of Brenda Lafferty and her 15-month-old daughter, Erica, by her brothers-in-law, Ron and Dan Lafferty. Mountain Meadows Massacre was unquestionably the low point in LDS history. The year was 1857. Local leaders in Cedar City, Utah, ordered the slaying of 120 men and women. Most scholars think this atrocity came about because of war hysteria, brought on by fears of federal troops headed to Utah territory in what would be called the Utah War, as well as violent sermons from Brigham Young and other major church leaders in the 1850s. The Lafferty murders were not the only violence committed by Mormon fundamentalists that Krakauer documented. His reasoning was, if we can pinpoint a series of murderers who justified their crimes by citing their LDS beliefs, beginning in 1857 and continuing to the early 2000s, then it stands to reason, according to Krakauer, that Mormonism is inherently violent. Now, Krakauer was writing in the aftermath of September 11, 2001, which meant he wanted to make a broad argument that religion was violent in general. It wasn't just about the LDS Church, just like the Book of Mormon musical isn't simply about the LDS tradition. It's designed to mock a wider swath of religion, whether those who consume these stories realize this or not. As the public relations director of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints wrote at the time, Krakauer's basic thesis appears to be that people who are religious are irrational, and that irrational people do strange things. The first book on the Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow murders was from Leah Sotilli, a journalist who made her debut with a podcast on Cliven and Ammon Bundy called Bundyville. In August 2020, Leah contacted me for an interview. I accepted, and we had a single conversation. I would guess it was an hour or less. At the time, I didn't have a lot of experience working with journalists, so I was naive. It was obvious to me that Leah hadn't done much research yet. We all have to start somewhere, so I assumed that this was a background interview to get her up to speed on some basic ideas. Our conversation was definitely surface level. I thought I was talking to someone at the beginning of a project who was on a quest to understand a very complicated subject. Most of our chat was me pointing her to topics she should explore in more depth. So when the book came out, I was disappointed to see that it was largely a discussion of the sources already probed by Nate Eaton and Justin Lum, two reporters who tackled the case early on, as well as understandings she had already developed while researching the Bundys. She added to this material some ideas from my book, Terrible Revolution, and an assortment of interviews she had conducted with religious studies scholars. And then Sotilli concludes by parroting the already well-worn thesis of John Krakauer. There's something about Mormonism that brings about violent crimes. But how could you tie the killing of four alleged zombies with the Latter-day Saint mainstream? Leah pointed to a recent lecture delivered by the Apostle Jeffrey R. Holland at Brigham Young University. Holland encouraged Brigham Young University professors to defend LDS ideas of family by comparing their efforts to musket fire. Now, I can't imagine anyone present at this lecture walking away with the idea that Holland was advocating literal violence. He had given a similar lecture in 2018 in which he made the same point, except through a basketball analogy. Yet if one learned of Holland's speech second or third hand from social media posts, as I assume Leah did, then I get how someone could come up with this misreading. So this is what Leah Sestele says about the speech in the conclusion of her book. Holland's speech was roundly criticized, especially given new concern over an extremist movement among Mormon ranks. People feared Holland was dog-whistling DESNAT, short for Deseret Nationalists, an online movement of those who would like Utah and the surrounding region to turn into a white ethnostate. It is a racist, accelerationist, anti-gay, anti-feminist movement of men who frequently discuss, of all things, blood atonement like the Danites once had. The church can't both expel the fringe and fan the flames that keep those movements alive, but that would require a serious change of heart. End quote. These comments are ridiculous to me on many levels. DESNAT is a group of internet trolls, and while I think they are racist, anti-gay, anti-feminist, and all-around despicable, but I actually suspect they have no interest in a, quote, white ethnostate. More importantly, no serious individual would think that Elder Holland was trying to send them a message with his encouragement to scholars to defend the faith. Of course, this is the problem with When the Moon Turns to Blood. Leah Sestele didn't know much about the actual context of Chad Daybell and Lori Ballow's crimes. So she focused on political extremism, the White Horse Prophecy, and other things she learned something about when she produced the Bundyville podcast. Now, I actually consider her book, When the Moon Turns to Blood, the best book we have written on this topic. It's well written, and as far as covering the events in the life of these people, she does an admirable job. It's the context and extrapolation that show that she should have taken several more years of research. That is, if her point was to bring actual insight to her reader. So, what are you going to learn in this podcast? You're going to learn about an apocalyptic subculture among a certain segment of Latter-day Saints. You'll find that within this group, there are those such as Chad Daybell who emphasize five major theological tenets. One, an imminent apocalypticism. Two, energy work. Three, reincarnation. Four, deliverance ministry. That's a focus on exorcism. And five, near-death experiences. None of these ideas are promoted by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but something interesting is occurring in living rooms and internet discussion boards. I'm going to bring you into this world. Join us right now for episode 2, Changelings.